ABC AFL Daily is the best conversation in footy. Hosted by Corbin Middlemass and Ben Cameron, alongside regulars like Mick Malthouse.
I mean, I don't remember too many games, but it's one of the ones I remembered. It was just that physical.
Bob Murphy.
Where do you guys get off thinking you can pick and choose?
And more. It keeps you in the loop with the biggest stories in the AFL and the number one analysis in the game. ABC AFL Daily. 5 apps a week on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
That is the sound of Mexico City awash with fans reveling in its nation, bossing the FIFA World Cup. We're talking about a country of 133 million people, almost entirely locked into the fate of their team. It makes Fed Square look play school. These tournament co-hosts probably haven't always appreciated the fact that the USA has kind of dominated the event ownership. Well, one thing is sure. No one, and I mean no one, is having a better time than Mexico while hosting this World Cup. Today we're digging into Mexico, the players, the coach, the fans, the whole thing. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. If you are looking for someone to talk about the FIFA World Cup, particularly hosted by the United States and Mexico, amongst Canada as well, you won't find many better than Jenny Chu, who represented Mexico as a player and is working in the USA on a documentary series for the World Cup. Jenny, got to start with the nation you represented, Mexico, because sometimes, you know, when you go to a party, Jenny, the host is anxious. And if the World Cup was a party right now, which it very much seems to be from where I'm sitting, and Mexico is the host or one of the hosts, that host does not look anxious. They look like they're having a great time. Can you explain how big this has been for the nation of Mexico?
It's been amazing, but if anyone knows how to host the World Cup, it is Mexico. This is their third time hosting. They're the only nation that's hosted three World Cups. So this is something that they know, and the fact that this country absolutely loves football. I mean, the conversation within the United States is, let's grow the sport. Let's make sure that everybody comes to love football after this. That's not the same conversation that Mexicans are having, right? Everybody loves football in Mexico. Everyone has their team. They love their national team. Even here, I'm based in Houston right now, and we're having watch parties, and there are 20,000 Mexicans just to watch a screen in a stadium at the Houston Dynamo Stadium because they live it differently. When you think about the differences, I played on both the U.S. youth team and the Mexican youth team, and there are complete differences. I lived on the border town of El Paso, Texas. So I really do experience the duality of both nations, and to see how differently they live the game has been incredibly interesting. The Mexicans really do get together to see. I'm sure you guys have seen scenes from Monterrey, the fan fest, Mexico City's fan fest. I mean, people come out to watch together, which is a little bit different to the experience that the Americans have. We've been hosting watch parties as well, but the Americans are not coming out to experience it together in the same volume as we've seen the Mexicans do. So I think it's something that becomes more of a cultural thing, that you're supposed to get together and experience these matches. I'm not sure how you guys are living it in Australia, but it's been really interesting to see the differences and the dualities of everything.
Here it's been live sites. The next one's going to be at about 4 a.m. Sydney time. So that sort of comes with the territory being a football fan in Australia. Do you know what comes with the territory? It seems to me from a distance being a Mexican fan is the challenge being as much psychological as it is physical. To look at the Azteca, it's a footballing cathedral. But I imagine that can bring pressure, that level of engagement. Does it seem to you that they are, this team, being able to channel that energy into an entirely positive force from what we've seen in three games?
I mean, this is not the best Mexico we've seen. We expect to see better. We expect them to see them grow into this. Mind you, they're leaving top of the group, 9 points. They haven't conceded. And I'm still saying this is not the best Mexico we have seen.
That's phenomenal play. Now they've got 3-4 here, Mexico. And a real chance. Opening goal. What a time for Mateo Chavez to grab his first goal for Mexico to bring the house down here in Mexico City.
Vasco Aguirre, the national team coach, has even said, you know, we expect better. We expect to be seeing them play better. And that's positive, right? Even though you are on top, it's not good enough. But that's the Mexican mentality here, is that the Mexican team should be doing better. They should be completely dominating. But going into it, it was a little bit of, you know, scary legs. The first game, there was multiple players that cramped. And they said, you know, we've played 9 matches heading into this and no one's cramped. It is the anxiety of playing in that stadium, of playing in a World Cup, that completely affects these players. And that's kind of beautiful, you know, to feel that pressure to represent your national team. That's exactly what you want to see. But it's interesting, you know, just seeing how things have changed. I've been following the Mexican national team for so long, and I covered all of the World Cup qualifiers before the Qatar World Cup. And to see the difference, you know, they were in disarray, this Mexican national team, before Vasco Aguirre comes back to be the national team coach for the third time, right? He has already been the national team coach, and they tried different things. They fell into really, really bad slumps, bad moments. To see them come back under Vasco Aguirre again says that there's something about that tradition, and there's confidence in that man.
It's been a long time since he led Mexico to a Football World Cup. And as you say, third time round. Can you tell us a little bit about the coach and the mentality and the character?
It really is more of a historic thing. There's so much discipline. There's like rules and regulations that you have to follow to the point where Mexican clubs were upset about. So, for example, he said that if you don't get to the Mexican national team camp by 8 a.m. this day, even though there was another tournament going on for the Mexican clubs, you will be cut from the national team. That there are no exceptions. There is nobody that is bigger than anybody else on the team. This is how you make sure that you prioritize the national team, and we are the most important thing. And you're either on the boat or you're not. And I think that there's so much power to that, because there were different iterations where there were very, very powerful players that ego took over. And that kind of ruined everything that the Mexican national team was supposed to stand for. And you see a veteran coach that has been the national team coach say, I'm not going to put up with any of that. You're either on board or you're not. And if you're going to be maybe a character issue, get off the team. We're here to be a team and to win this together. So it's been really nice to see this Mexican team come together again, because I was part of, you know, so many, you know, reporting on different moments where the U.S. kind of looked like they were taking over in CONCACAF. Canada came and it looked like Canada was potentially better than Mexico, which had never been the case before. So we've gone through all these different iterations, these difficult moments for Mexico. To see where they are now, as a Mexico fan, I'm feeling pretty good.
You talk about the United States and the kind of embedded rivalry there. I mean, there was a sense coming into this tournament that while Canada and Mexico were co-hosts, the fact that the USA got the lion's share of the games meant that it was their World Cup, inverted commas, you know, the kind of owning it. And that, plus the political backdrop of Trump's America, I just wonder, how is that being influenced or influencing the way Mexicans are interacting with this tournament and how they're sort of seeing Big Brother, for want of another term, across the border, you know, in this tournament too?
In my experience, I don't think that's how they're living it. You know, maybe there were discussions at the beginning of making sure that, you know, Mexico and Canada felt as much a part of the hosting conversations and aspects and being invited to things as the United States. But now that it's kicked off, we're really seeing every country come out in their own way. You know, I've done a documentary series, like you mentioned, on all of the host cities. So I've been to all 3 countries and I've been to all 16 host cities. And all of them are so very different. The colorfulness of Mexico, the pride that Canadians have, and then the United States has all the different pockets and the different environments and the soccer culture that goes along with that as well. I called it soccer there. Well, you guys are the Socceroos, so you won't kill me for it. But if I said that on a British, they might get mad at me there. It's really interesting to see how the different countries have shown up. You know, there's been obviously political differences in moments, specifically Iran's national team coming and making sure that they were staying in Mexico instead of in the United States, because all of the conversation there. And that kind of allows for pride for Mexico. You know, all of the teams that have come out and said, you know, Mexico has welcomed us so beautifully has been really, really nice to see.
Am I right saying that the bulk of the playing cohort plies their trade within Mexico in the domestic league there?
I think yes. I mean, we're starting to have more players play outside. There are definitely players that do play outside in a way that they didn't before. But yes, I still think that the majority do play in Mexico.
One, I guess, who has shown his capacity to play at the highest leagues across the world is striker Raul Jimenez. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes.
He's maybe a story within the story. His career, I'm sure you've covered it along the way, it's sort of a study in resilience. A fractured skull, a nasty hernia before the 2022 World Cup where he tried to play through that pain. He's now healthy. It looks as though he's thriving, scoring. How beloved is this player and how emblematic is he of the national side?
Absolutely important. Just because of that struggle aspect as well, kind of going into the Premier League, showing what Mexican players can do, especially in the striker position, something that Chicharito did as well. He is very beloved. But just because you mentioned it, I don't want to take away from Raul Jimenez here, because we do love that story. Guillermo Ochoa, he was celebrated. This is the sixth World Cup that he has been to for Mexico. And in that Czechia match, he comes into the match. And that was such a moment. It was emotional. I was at the Houston Dynamo Stadium with so many other Mexican fans, and people are crying. People are throwing their beers and they're cheering for this man coming on.
He'll turn 41 the day after the World Cup final. The oldest Mexican to play at a World Cup. He has beaten Rafa Marquez. The man who made his debut back in 2005. His first World Cup appearance against Cameroon in Natal in Brazil in 2014.
More so than these younger players that are just coming up. And while it's so exciting to have these young players, there's so much history that comes along with Raul Jimenez being a part of so many World Cup teams. The struggle and kind of gaining respect around the world of football because you have a Mexican playing for Wolves, playing at a high level. There's so much beauty about this team, and I really hope they go far. You know, we're up against Ecuador next. We'll see. Very similar teams. Patrick, I don't know how you guys view it in Australia or what you think of the Mexican national team.
I mean, they just seem joyful, talented. We had the misfortune. I guess it was good for our preparation to play them at the Azteca for the Australian side leading into it and to experience the idea of an entire stadium against you, I think, was somewhat valuable for the Socceroos. What I've loved watching from a distance is the way that the entire country is completely enraptured in this tournament. And sometimes teams have a cult player. Am I right in saying that Mexico has a cult duck? What can you tell me about Merlin and the bird's celebrity right now? I don't know if you've seen the vision of this duck in a Mexican shirt wandering the streets of Mexico City, seemingly very much beloved. I don't know. It certainly made news
here. I didn't know about this duck. I didn't know that was his name, but I have seen the imagery. I have no idea. Everybody in Mexico lives it so well. I love that you guys got to experience it, you know, as Australians in Estadio Azteca. What a beautiful thing to say, having played in Estadio Azteca. I mean, the country really comes out for their national team. I think one of the important things as we head into these next few stages, though, Patrick, is that they are staying in Mexico City, in CAR, you know, in their Centro de Alto Rendimiento, where they train, where their home base is. So they're kind of really have the advantage of being home. You think about the Ecuador and Mexico matchup here, the last three matches that they've played against each other, they've been draws. So they're very, very similar type of teams. They're very defensive. But now you're going into, what are the tiny, tiny advantages? What are the tiny things that can push you over? And being at home, I think, is a huge advantage.
Ecuador, I mean, they're a team that were many what you might call a hipster pick, I think, coming into this tournament, and they sort of were a little bit disappointing, but then that tremendous win.
Hipster pick?
Yeah, I mean, like the thinking man selection for the World Cup, a kind of dark horse who maybe could go far, given what they'd done in qualification, you know, a side that had been able to mix it with the likes of Argentina, Brazil, and the South American sort of cohort, and then was expected to deliver so much, but it's been hard for them to take on nations where they've had to play the football. They seem to prefer it without the ball. And now they'll get Mexico in the round of 32 in Mexico. It's going to be an enormous contrast of styles and a heck of a clash. What's the sense you're getting from Mexican fans about how far they believe this team could go? Like, where is the nation setting its sights now?
Patrick, you're spot on about Ecuador, though. I love your analysis of that and the fact that they have not done, you know, what was expected of them coming into this. How far do we think that Mexico can go? You know, everything that I've been seeing recently is we've won the group. We did not concede. Those are 9 points. That means that you can do anything, right? Like, no, don't look at the opponent and say, what does that mean for us? And just say, you know what, take it to them. You can do anything. That's the Mexican mentality right now. And I personally feel like that's the best way to go about this because we've seen so many upsets. There is no bigger or lesser than team. When you're playing 90 minutes, who knows what's going to happen?
The other thing I've got to ask you about is the United States. Obviously, based in the United States, a strong sort of connection with the country as well. From what you're saying, you spoke about it earlier, the idea of the United States hopefully capturing the imagination and growing the game. Are you seeing that yet, or do we need to see the wins continue to pile up for Team America before there's that level of buy-in from the broader country?
It's a good question. I think that as we progress in these knockout stages, the excitement will continue to grow, is my hope. You see people that have never been to a football match before going to FanFest and understanding what that means to live football. To see all of the different cultures that have come to the United States to experience their teams. I mean, Netherlands has the Orange March here in Houston, and people that had no idea about football or Netherlands went out in orange shirts and they just packed the streets. and all of a sudden you have new fans. I hope that that is all going towards the fact that we have captured the imagination of people who are not so much football fans. But we saw it after the 1994 World Cup. You know, this is the ability to grow the game is now. This is how you go ahead and have people fall in love with the national team, have people fall in love with the sport, and have kids start to play. You know, seeing little kids at all these events is what matters most.
And just finally, you personally, you've mentioned the fact that you grew up right on the border, spending time in both nations, representing both nations. If you had to pick one, you know, they're playing in a grand final. Which lane are you choosing, Jenny?
Patrick, it's such a funny question when people ask me that. I always root for both. I am incredibly proud of everything that I am. But playing for the Mexican national team, like wearing that emblem in a couple Youth World Cups, completely changes how I view it. For me, the Mexican national team was what I saw. I grew up in a very, very Latino community. Most people are Mexican around me. I grew up playing that style of football. For me, if they're playing against each other, it's Mexico. But the growth of the game here in the United States has been beautiful. In the men's side, you know, if we talk about the women have always dominated.
It's been a tremendous tournament so far. I think everyone's enjoying seeing the co-hosts all doing well, whether that's Canada, the United States, or especially Mexico, given the joy that they've been bringing to the tournament. Thanks so much for sharing a little bit of that joy with us, Jenny. Appreciate it.
I just want to say, I know we were talking about it ahead of time, but I lived in Australia for a bit, I think 6 months, and I absolutely loved it. You guys are amazing people. You're wonderful people. I'm happy to see you guys move on as well.
Headlines. Australia is continuing its build-up for the win-or-go-home clash with Egypt. It's not a nation we've played a lot of football against, but the Ollieroos did actually lose to them at the Tokyo Games. Connor Metcalf was part of that team. Here is what he remembers.
It actually feels like a blur, to be honest. They were quite a big physical team. I just remember it being really humid and hot. We didn't play our best game. Yeah, they ruined our dream. I guess you could say it's a bit of a revenge, personally.
From an Egypt point of view, there's a lot of focus on star striker Mo Salah. The national coach reckons the ex-Liverpool gun will be over his hamstring injury and ready to play. Today, Canada made it through to the round of 16 for the first time after a thrilling injury time victory over South Africa. The American manager, Jesse Marsh, was preaching legacy to his Canadian players afterwards.
Canadian heroes! Canadian heroes for the future children of this country who play this sport. The sport has a big future because of you guys. You should be so proud of who you are. You should be so proud of this game. You never crossed the heat. You are Canadian heroes.
They'll next play either the Netherlands or Morocco. So, as is evident, the round of 32 is underway. How are you feeling about the extended format of this tournament? Not everyone loves it. Take Ghana manager Carlos Queiroz. He said, the number of teams that can qualify for this competition can turn it into something vulgar and ordinary, he said, after Ghana's 2-1 defeat to Croatia over the weekend. When so many teams can qualify, is the value still rare? That would seem debatable to me, but it is only my opinion. And it's kind of an interesting opinion, given his team progressed as a third place team to the round of 32. Anyway, I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, World Cup special produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to ESPN, SBS, DRM News for the extra audio used in this episode.